Hey y'all, this is Taylor, and this is the Iconicast podcast by Icon Meals.
Welcome everyone to another edition of Iconicast. Today we have a special guest. I am excited to introduce you to me. He's a character that's larger than life. He is an individual that I have much respect for. Just it's all around his, I'll call it his brand, his level of integrity, how humble he is. An individual that I'd say is one of the loyalest individuals that I've ever met, but also one of the hardest working individuals I've ever met. And if you guys were standing here, which you will see if you're watching the recording, you'll have to say, I'll have to get him to flex, right? It is a larger than life individual. But without further ado, I wanted to welcome Chef Rush to our, Chef Andre Rush to our podcast today. So let me just give you a little bit of background before we get into Chef, right? Chef was, I guess most people know him as one of the top chefs in the United States. He was a retired master sergeant. We'll talk about some of the other interesting characteristics in a minute, but he was been a veteran, retired. I think you served 23 years in the United States Army during your career. You've been, chef for, a Joint Chief of Staff, Secretary of the Army Chief of Staff, Superintendent of the United States Military Academy at West Point. I think also you've served pretty much for the First Families, anyone that had big gatherings in the White House, right? Doing everything, special dinners, gathering, banquets, etc. So again, wide array, and that's not even getting into what you do on the charitable side, right? Which we'll talk about in a second. So just an extraordinary individual. Thank you very much, Chef, for spending some time with us today. And I just appreciate your friendship, but just also appreciate being able to work with you.
It's an absolute pleasure to be here with you and see you again. And of course, I appreciate your friendship. And when you told me that you had a spot open, I stopped everything I was doing just to be here, just so I can talk to you, actually.
That's awesome. Well, I appreciate you spending time with us today and stuff. So we'll talk about, I guess, your background, the chef, all the different things. But also one of the key things, right, that I guess when I got introduced to you with Greg a couple years back and stuff was really the mindset that you have, but also just sort of your push-ups, right? People see you and larger than life guy, but your 22 push-up challenge every day. So you're doing 2,222 push-ups per day?
I do them every day, except now I take off Saturday and Sunday. Sunday, I kind of recoup. I have a lot more workload, and I've always had a big workload. And then I also use that to just gorge out and pick out all the time on my Icon Meals.
Tell us a little bit. I know, like, some people know about the suicide and military veterans. It's 22 military veterans who die from suicide every single day, correct?
Every single day. And people don't understand that's 22 veterans that commit suicide every single day. That's excluding because, for reference, government doesn't take accountability of the spouses and the kids. That is a second nature to that. So that's only the active military members, not their spouses or kids or things related.
You also expanded that sort of that initiative and stuff, right? Outside of just suicide prevention, I know you spoke about PTSD, having that yourself before, speaking to different members, counseling and stuff. But also, I think I've seen somewhere you got into more on the younger ages, the cyberbullying, the bullying.
This day and age, especially during a pandemic, it just became a pandemic in itself with the cyberbullying and groups of gangs. And even myself as a big guy, I mean, people try to bully me all the time, you know, because they're on a computer, you know, tapping away, you know, instead of being a person. Yeah, of course, I don't know what finger warriors, right? Yeah. But, you know, a guy like me, I can take it. And I say, bring it to me before you bring it to them. It doesn't matter the mindset, because some people, unfortunately, are not as strong-minded as others. They may not have that support system like I have with you. So the cyberbullying, social bullying, just bullying in general, no matter what age group, but especially with the younger age group, is extremely important to me. I was bullied when I was a kid, and I was a big kid. That just didn't mean that I was scared. It just mean that I just didn't want to fight. I'm the opposite now, but back then, it wasn't about that. It was just about trying to be nice, and people just want to do what they do.
So I guess we're going to do your background in a second. With all your push-ups over the years, right, how many push-ups do you think you've done?
You know, right when the pandemic was happening, I was actually getting ready to do the Guinness Book of World Record. Wow. I was at the Arnold Classic.
Okay. Yep.
When they brought it to me. And when that happened, they canceled the Arnold Classic. They closed everything down, of course. Excuse me. And the whole demographics changed, because actually the world kind of shifted a little bit. And I kind of got off of it. But I'll say I'm in the millions. I know that for sure.
Dang. amazing. So you've got an absolutely incredible mindset, okay? Like, I know you now for a couple of years. Your mindset's one of the top, right? Just hard, focused, do what you need to do. Where did that mindset, like, where did that mindset come from? What's your mindset on a daily basis?
Win. that's every day.
Well, I'll go back one other question first. So I guess, where did that work ethic come from, right? Let's go back into your parents. Do you have siblings?
I do. So okay. That's when I say win is, yep, my mindset, my work ethics came from my father.
Okay.
100%. I think I remember telling you that, you know, when I was born, my dad put me to work. I didn't have a typical ordinary life growing up in Columbus, Mississippi, which is about this big. I, you know, even with my friends, I was kind of on this side, they were on this side, and we weren't rich, we were poor, but we had each other. And my mindset was, my dad said, work harder than anyone else all the time. And every day is your first day. And I still have that mindset to the day. I don't get complacent. I don't say, oh, I've done it already or whatever. I do the same thing every day. I do it when I say win. If I already won a race, I'm gonna win again. And that's the thing I try to tell people. It's not about arrogance, or because my humility is always going to be here. But at the same time, I have to level up and I have to step up, you know. And when you think about things like that, you know, like, for instance, working in the White House, I'm going to always be the hardest worker. No matter where I am, if I take a toothbrush and scrub across, and I'm going to smile while I'm doing it, and I'm going to dare anybody else to beat me. So my mindset absolutely came from my father, which I love. At that time, as a young kid, I was like, I wanted to do more things as a kid. You know, I played track and football and did all these other things, but I thought I would resent it. But honestly, I'm so grateful, because I see the way people are now compared to then. I had no idea that it was different. You know, I thought everybody worked like me, had the same mindset or same work ethics or the same drive, but that's not the case.
Yeah, it's way far from the case. I guess most of the people we see today, right, they're happy to be that mediocre, okay, or be average or just under subpar, just to do enough to get by. And I guess that's the message, one of the messages you preach, right? You motivate, you inspire, you try to have people level up. And I think that's one of the things that caught me, right, attracted me to you, because sort of like attract. And again, similar circles and stuff, you and Mike O'Hearn and other people that we've known together, again, just, I love it, because you push so many people to level up. So I guess, jump for a second, who is the one that taught you to cook? Was that family as well, or was that outside after?
So that was a strange, that was my mother. On a different spectrum, in Mississippi, as a young black man, especially with my father, who was very stern and hard, men didn't cook. They don't cook at all, right? The women cook. You know, that was kind of that Southern hospitality type of mindset. And when I worked with my dad and doing all the other things I was doing, my mother used to cook, and I loved her food. And it was eight of us at the time. Wow. And I was the wee baby, I think it's the next to the last. But my other brothers and sisters starting up were about 12 years older, senior. So I used to sneak and cook with my mom without my dad knowing, right? Because I loved just being around her. And she was always a cheerful woman. So that's where I got my compassion from. And I love the feeling that I got with that food. So that people gave, and how it was when my brothers and sisters ate around a table, and also with the service that went along with it.
So I've been told, I know, like, I've seen you cook with Mike and a bunch of other places, right? But then I also hear you're a badass pastry chef, right? So where did that come from? Is that the same from mama, or?
No, that didn't come from mama. Even though mom had that Southern thing, when I started doing the cooking thing, I had no idea what culinary was, right? It actually happened by accident. My whole entire career happened by accident, but it was ordained. Wow. And I fell in love with it. And I want to know everything about culinary. Someone saw me at a very young age and was like, hey, I want you to come do a competition. I'm like, what kind of competition? You know, and then that was when my eyes opened up, like, wow, you can do this with food. You can do that with food. And it was, you know, I'm an artist by trade. So it was a canvas, you know, and I started doing pastries, and then I became a master ice carver. Then I started doing just with our wines and this. I just wanted it all. I was just like a kid in a candy store. Just give it all to me.
Wow. So what on the pastry side, I guess, what would be your favorite sort of pastry or to perfect and to cook and bake?
So on the pastry side, I'm actually kind of a foo-foo chef. So meaning that when I'm pastry guys, I'm the pastry guy that makes all those pretty wedding cakes and make pastry look like other people and sculptures. Or when you look and you see those pastries that have like puzzle tarts and those French pastries, I love. But I always have to come back to my southern roots, which is going to be just an old-fashioned caramel cake or a red velvet like from the White House. Or pecan pies and carrot cake, which I love to death as well. So I'm a nut when it comes to pastries.
So what about on, I guess yourself, let's jump into like your daily routine for you, right? I know training's still a big part of your day. Your push-ups are a big part of your day. I know you're a big boy, you love to eat and different things. So walk us through that. What's like your daily, and then we were talking a bit before camera, right? Really your sleep patterns, because everyone thinks, you hear the gurus tell you, right, you need 6 to 8 hours of sleep or you're doing this and that. And I told you, me and you were similar in that regard. Maybe not 2 hours for me. I'm a bit of a 3-hour guy. And people are always like, you're like doing damage, blah, blah, blah. But I'm just wired that way. So,
we were talking about it. And I was laughing and I had no idea because, you know, people bother me like, oh, Mr. 2-hour man. I was like, yeah, that's 2 more hours that I get to do that what you can't do. You know, actually 8 more hours or whatever. I don't care. And, you know, made fun of it. And I was like, wow, people really don't have a work ethics or anything of the sort. I mean, not only from being in Iraq or Afghanistan, when I'm doing, you know, working 18 hours a day, when I say literally working 18 hours, the men and the women that's doing that, because we have different types of jobs. It's kind of like a doctor who's going in, who has to do a surgery for 16 hours on someone. And people are like, how can you do a surgery on 16 hours on someone? Or how can a police officer or a servant or an EMT or whoever can work those many hours straight? You know, it becomes just part of who you are. I was doing that at a very young age when I had to get up and help my father or do something with my mother. And as it went along, it just happened to go that I went into the military where I was already accoladed at that point. And then it also happened to be where I started working for people who were more than I could learn from and I could feed from, right? And I could also lead. And so it just became who I was. So later on in life, even after the military, it never changed. You know, whether I get 2 hours of sleep, 3 hours of sleep, if I get 4 hours of sleep, I'm doing a great day, right? And that's a great day. But if a person sleeps 8, 9, 10, 12 hours, that's on you. I'm just saying you're missing out on a lot. I talked about the thing with Steve Harvey saying, you know, a business-minded, successful people, they can't sleep 8 hours a day. They can't sleep 6 hours a day because you have the East Coast, you have the West Coast. And me, I'm international also. So I do a lot of work in different countries as far as the UK, as far as Argentina, as far as Brazil. So it's just a big mixing pot.
Yeah. So what is if you were not on the road, not eating Icon meals for the convenience and stuff, right? What is your favorite? I've heard it told before. And I think this was Mark Bell's podcast or something. You guys were talking about chicken. And Mark said, hey, I hear your thing's favorite chicken, but it wasn't chicken, it was chickens, right? So chicken. From that standpoint, fill the audience in on what your favorite meal is. I know it's like the chicken or whatever, okay, but how do you cook and what do you do? How do you make your favorite meal?
So my go-to is going to be chicken. I just did a show for Japan. They came here, or they came around, I guess, whatever it was, and I did a chicken. You know, one of the things I do at the White House, I love a perfect cooked chicken. You know, I've had a couple of videos where I put it right on a griddle on top of it. I season it up really good. I scotch it both sides and I put it in the oven at a high heat for about 8 minutes, bring it out, let it rest, and it's perfect tender. The white meat is as juicy as the dark meat, right? I also use organic as well. So the organic chickens are not as big as those other chickens that grow about this big, you know, because they're
full of everything, right? Yeah.
They're full of a little everything. So you have to be very wary of that, especially this day and age, because people want to put a higher price tag on something if you see bigger with it, right? But bigger doesn't necessarily mean better.
Yeah, we understand that being in this industry, and a lot of people I don't think would know what the term woody means in different things. And when you get into those bigger chickens and different things, right? So we here use a specific small-breasted chicken, and it's very easy to tell when someone tries to substitute for what we do, but that's another conversation. So
you're exactly right. I'm glad you said that, though.
So how do you train, right? I've seen you in the gym before with Mike and stuff. You guys trained arms when I was there. You've trained chest, different things. I've seen other videos, but I know you're a guy, you're a big guy, but you're not a slow guy, okay? You have that element of endurance. I've heard you doing like the running and stuff. I think one time you said you were at 300 pounds and you're doing like under 13s for 2 miles and different things. So talk to us a little bit about that for a second on your sort of the mindset and then how you're training if you're at home and then I guess versus when you're on the road, different things.
So my training has always been and always will be, I'm an endurance trainer. And so I'm kind of like a mutt. When I say mutt is that I think when Arnold, we first started talking, he said, you're between a power lifter for the strength and a bodybuilder and a, not a crossfader or something else, but because I literally utilize every last one. And I'll go back to Michael Hearn with this because Mike has that same mindset. And I love training with him because it's like, let's get it, you know, let's go heavyweight for high reps. Let's go lightweight for high reps and we don't switch it, right? And that's where that muscle memory comes in. And you look at someone like him and yourself that's at that age and me, myself, of course, where you're like, okay, how do you maintain that? Because what I do here, and I know you're a contestant, is I hear a lot of guys who are actually younger than us. They're like, well, I used to look like that when I was your age. I'm like, you know, I used to do this. I used to do that. And I say, I get so tired of hearing it when I say you can still do it. But you have to also be careful, mindful of everything that you're doing. I like to train hard, heavy. And normally what I do is a lot of my reps go past, you know, 15 to 25. And when I deal with Mark Bell, you know, I put them to the test and they did great, but they found out the hard way.
So it's crazy. Yeah. I hear like a lot of people like, hey, crush the day and different things. And I think your phrase is, hey, destroy it, right? So if you're going at anything on that mindset, and we talked for a brief second, like so many people I see sort of, I call it just going through life, like on that mediocre sort of thing. And it's funny when you say about the, hey, I used to do that, because I always tell people anytime I have it, like someone wants to do business or someone wants to do something, let's go train, right? And they're like, hey, what are we going to train? I'm like, whatever you want, legs, arms, whatever, right? And they're like, oh, well, I used to be able to lift this much, okay, or this, or I had this injury 10 years ago, but I used to. That is like, to me, that's sort of a similarity, or it's a metaphor for business, for life, right? How they're going to give you those excuses if they're giving them to you before. But so many people have that mediocre mindset. So when you talk about people and you're inspiring them and you're speaking to large audiences and stuff, I love it, because it's like your phrase destroy. So what does that mean, like for our listeners?
So let's say destroy it, you know, I explain it to, like I explain it to everyone, it's an open mindset, it's a metaphor, it's everything in life, whether it be work, business, relationships, anything that you do, especially the gym, is destroy it. Like I said, every day is the first day. Each time you come in, you give it your all or you give nothing. There's no 99%. Yeah. You know, there's no 99% club. You know that. It's always 100% on whatever you're going to do. You cannot slack. You can't. Even when I'm at my, it was funny because when I did that thing with Mark Bell, I had been traveling all day. I had 1 hour of sleep.
Wow.
1 hour of sleep that I had before we got up at 4 o'clock in the morning to go do our first set, right? And it was like, okay, man, this is going to be a long day. And my body was already, because I had been traveling so much. And then I'm like, okay, we're going to work out. We're going to do this, we'll do that. And then we were sipping on some, sipping on a little wine, working out with nothing in our stomach. And my body was like, okay, destroy it. Every day is the first day.
I love that mindset. So let's advance a little bit. How did you become the celebrity chef, right? Okay, because I don't think it was just, hey, Chef Rush, Chef Andre showed up one day and he was the celebrity, right? So I think what people don't see always in life is the in-between, right? They see the end result, but they might see the start, but then they might just forget about the middle. So talk us through that. Like, you didn't just show up. So how many years had you been building your career, let's say, before you got to that point?
So that's a great question, because like you said, it doesn't just happen. Like I actually referenced that today where someone, you have a celebrity chef that'll cook for one celebrity. I'm a celebrity chef. You have a celebrity barber that cuts one person's hair one time. I'm a celebrity barber. You know, it's kind of bring it up. I'm just who I am. I'm Chef Rush. Don't forget that, damn it. But I say it because I've been doing this for over 20 plus, 25 years. I was humble, and a lot of times, people always ask me, my guy, I said, Chef, why don't you get out in the light? Why don't you go do a TV show? Why don't you do that? I'm like, that's not for me. That's not for me. That wasn't for me until it was time for me. And I didn't know it was time for me until it became time for me. And I had to put myself in that situation. I was like, I've always helped people on a lower scale, especially being in the military. But when I got an opportunity to bring that scale of helping people all the way through it, even when people told me I would fail, they said, Chef, this is not gonna work. You need to do X, Y, and Z. And I said, well, if I help one person, I'm good. If I help a million people, I'm good. If it was a run, I'm okay with that. I don't care. Even though I'm not that rich, I wasn't a rich person or anything of the sort, because people always try to make it about money. I was a person that said, hey, my integrity, my loyalty, and my deeds is what I'm gonna give.
So I guess you probably answered this question, but I've heard you say before, sort of being a chef is one of the hardest jobs on earth, right? But it's also one of the most rewarding. So I've heard you just a second ago say, hey, if I've helped one person or whatever, but speak to that a little bit in regards to the element of hard, because hard is defined sort of by what you think hard is, right? And so explain that a little bit to us if you can.
And when I say hard, you know, and I talk about being a chef, the job as a chef, because when I came in as a young Black man as being a chef, it was shunned. It was a cook. It was a cook, and people looked at me and it degraded, and it was just like belittling. It's like, you know, you're a McDonald's, and I said it in a respectful way, but it's a service, because food is culture. Food is what helps you get through anything. You know, it makes you happy, makes you sad. So what I say, when you're working 24 hours, like just nonstop and doing these things, which I've done and I still do, it become taxing, especially when you're treated a certain way, you know? So I always make sure if service is granted, service is giving, meaning that I tell my guys, I'll give you a great example. People always ask me, you know, what does the president need? How do you feed the president? How do you do this? How do you do that? You know, and I said, for me, I the way my service is for the president is at this level. But when I'm feeding kids or the homeless, it's at this level. The thing you got to remember is that you never waver on service. You have to remember that the president, whoever those fancy people are, they get it all the time. So don't waver when you go to someone that doesn't have as much, right? You always have the same mindset, 24/7.
100% have that big servant mentality, dude. And just, again, I know you give so much with ever expecting anything back. So I'm very appreciative of that for you and Steph, and just what you bring there. But I guess, what really brought you, like, because you've learned a lot of things along the way, right? It's not just, hey, chef sort of grew up. So what brought you, or what made you sort of learn and do all these different things? Do you think that was ingrained in you, or was that something that as you sort of came in your career, you wanted more and more and more, and you just, that was your go-get?
No, it wasn't coming from Mississippi, it was not ingrained in me. I didn't know but Black and white. But as I went and I met different people, even my accent, being a Southern accent, I had to change the way that I thought. I couldn't be biased. So I had to be the person on the outside. I also had to be the person on the inside, looking in, looking out. I had to be equal and non-biased on everything. So people will look at you like, you know, they'll look at you and they're like, oh, that's a muscle head. That's a whatever you call it, guys. You're a swole head or whatever. Or they'll look at you and say, oh, and I remember when I came out, people were like, another muscle head, juice head coming up on the scene. And then I started talking, right? And I'm like, wait a second, what is he talking about? I'm like, okay, this guy's talking some common sense, you know, on common grounds. And then everybody started listening. So I had to talk a different way. I had to articulate a different way. I had to act a certain way. I had to do things to get better and bigger audiences to do this. So I had to learn this along the way. And then I had to meet people like you. Like you talked about Dan Flashman. You know, when I started doing my social media, I had no one. We weren't allowed to have social media. I had to learn it all on my own. And I know I stayed up all night trying to figure this Instagram or this Twitter or whatever out, which I knew. And by the way, I never wanted to be on any of it. Yeah. Because I hated this stuff, because I know what could come along with it. But at the same time, I also know that it could bring a lot of good.
Well, I think that's a lesson in itself right there, right? Because if you had never stepped up, you had been too scared to try or ask, right? You would have never had where you were. So I think that's a great lesson, because it sounds like, and I'm sure you can speak to this, but you probably had different failures along the way that you've overcome, right? And just grown and grown and grown. So I guess, what new skills or things sort of are you taking on and learning today? Like, let's just step back for a second, because when you mentioned it, you said, hey, not only a chef, not only a pastry chef, but like, I look at these sort of accolades, right? And it's friggin' like master ice carver. Where the heck did that come from? Sugar sculptor, right? Like, those are some absolutely like sort of crazy specialties. And then we haven't spoke to this yet. Your damn arms are 24 inches, okay? You've got like small children in each arm. So between you and a couple others, Mike Mahorn and stuff, people of course say, hey, not natty, but that's another conversation. Okay. So, but like, what skills is the chef learning today and stuff? What are you looking at? Are you looking at more like, how can you impact more people speaking? How can you add value back in that segment? Your culinary is always there, right? But what's sort of on that agenda for you today?
So, you know, the funny thing is that people know me for my culinary and the things that I do, but, you know, it's a little overwhelming because I usually travel about 20 to 20 plus days out of the month. I travel all the time. A lot of people don't know that I don't even cook. When I go travel to speak. I speak to kids, I speak to women, I speak about, you know, insecurities, I speak to PTSD, about sexual trafficking. I speak to businesses, top levels to lower levels. I speak to everyone. I mean, literally, I go help organizations, I'm involved with the government, and which I'm grateful for. You know, I use being a chef because everything has to have a niche. You know, if you want to do this job, if you want to be successful, you know, I don't have to use somebody else to feed off of them. I don't need to try to feed off of somebody in a negative way to make my profile grow. I had to learn and say, I can't be like everybody else. Everybody else wants to go off of drama and hate or this or that. And believe me, that's what gets the most views. But if you start talking about kumbaya and, hey guys, let's help everybody, people are like, okay, whatever, another guy, let me go look at the stupid video again, right? And nothing's wrong with that. But me, I had to kind of figure that way of how to work that out. And you know, that's when I put on my chef jacket, because I'm like, hey, I look good in my chef jacket. Now let me grow from this. You know, I got 24-inch arms and I'm a badass chef. So I'm like, that's gonna be my foundation. People don't know that I have many degrees and accolades besides that. I'm a business person. Yep. So my profile, my branding is a business. So everything that I do is business accoladed. People sometimes get it confused that I'm the talent. I'm like, no, I'm the CEO behind the talent.
Yep. So one of the things I think I saw somewhere as well, like you, I forget who it is, you partnered with someone in regards to, I think, to help towards PSD and other stuff in regards to making food as medicine. Is that correct? For a while?
Yes. So I used that was with the USO, with the military. Okay. It's called Cooking and Cope. I started a program called Cooking and Cope where people disrespect food a little bit, you know, and I want people to come back to realize how powerful and how vibrant food is from beginning of time to even now, right? We kind of take it for granted. We've taken it for granted, kind of like what we do for ourselves. You know, food is holistic, who's food medication, food is giving, loving, it's social. Food is family, food is all these different things. Mindset, mentality is healing. I mean, from your blood pressure, people have to understand why they're putting these foods in their bodies and appreciate it for what it is. You know, you can go to a fancy restaurant, you can go this and that and say, oh my God, it was so great. But be appreciative of where that food's coming from. Like I said, I eat the organic or I do this. Like even when I come meal, I'm like, oh my God, I'm starving. I'm here in the middle of Africa and I got my Icon meals. You know, I'm appreciative of that, of what it is. And they also understand that if that's 90%, you know, your nutrition and what's going on in your body is 90% of your mindset if you're trying to grow and try to do things like that. You know, so I started using it where I got guys with PTSD and women with PTSD and just got a mystery basket, which was just a bunch of food, and said, without a recipe, make me something. Right?
So I have two questions because I know people would want me to before I get into something else. But so what would be Chef Rush's favorite cheat meal?
Oh my God, cheat meal. You know what? I cheat a lot. I mean, I eat a lot. I mean,
the way you train, your body is always, always burning. So
yeah, you know, and people don't understand that the way you train, your body gives back to you. I mean, your body actually, you have to become one with your body. I tell people, I didn't know when I became one with my body. It was at a young age and I realized it, and I just assumed everybody else was the same way. My body speaks to me. It's kind of like when you have to cough, like I got a cough, or when your nose running, you're like, oh, go get something. But internally, if you really listen closely, your body speaks to you in all these different things. Even at rest, I can burn 2,000 calories, 3,000 calories, and going in and taking in 6,000. It's nothing to take in 6,000 calories. People are like, oh my God, you can't take in 6,000. You got to be a strong man. No, you got to think about simplicity. Your mindset is, think about these boxers, you know, Floyd Mayweather or Michael Phelps, who takes in 8, 9, or 10,000 calories. Like, you don't question them because that's what they do. And they don't care if you do, the same way I don't. But it's the same time, you got to understand how your body's supposed to work and what makes it work.
Cool. So you mentioned a few minutes ago in regards to more or less being the CEO behind everything, like the brand, right? Business degrees, and I know you have multiple degrees and a bunch of different things, but you seem to have a real crazy, I thought, entrepreneurial drive, right? Has that always been the way with you?
It is, but you want me to tell you, honestly, we've talked about this, you can have the most outrageous, outstanding entrepreneurial drive. And even in business, and what I've learned, you have to have the right team. Mm-hmm. You have to have the right team. I mean, you can do it all by yourself. And trust me, I've done a lot by myself, a lot. That's what I put in my book, and I talked about that. But it's hard because I'm also a serial fire. If I'm working harder than you, we have a problem. If I do that, and here's the thing, nine out of 10 times, I'm going to work harder than you, and I need you to work harder than me. If I'm giving you anything that I've earned, that's coming out of my pocket, of my mentality, so you're going to have to work that hard. So I've always been that way. It's just the hardest part is just finding the right people and the right fit, because you know as well as I know, getting those business partners or people that marry with you is the hardest thing in the world.
Yeah, a team plays an important role in anything, and typically you want that culture, right? You want that build, you want that feeding off each other. But so was there ever a time, I guess, in your career, your life, where you were complacent? You felt complacent?
Complacency? No.
That's great. Yeah,
when I say complacency on that part is that my mind just won't let me do that. I mean, I'm always on the guard. I'm always, and don't take this the wrong way when I say this, I'm always thinking negative towards myself.
Yep.
I'm always scrutinizing myself. I'm always
awesome, because you're the hardest critic on yourself, which a lot of people can't do, right? So they let themselves off all the time. I tell people, like, to me, I use a word. I say you have an excuseless life. I don't even know if that's a real word, right? But from that standpoint, because in life you're either buying or you're selling excuses, right? And most people are selling themselves excuses and then buying them back. And I love that because you're not doing that. So that's absolutely a good lesson as well. But it's incredible. So.
And the thing about that, just to expand, is that I do that because there's always, if I go in a room of 1,000, I'm speaking, I'm looking that there's going to be one person, whether it be 100, that's going to try to look for something wrong, right? When I went into the White House for the first time, I was looking like, I have to prove myself. When I go into the military, I have to prove myself. When I get here, I have to prove myself. People ask me how, because I didn't formally, people ask me about speaking. I've done a lot of speaking. I do a lot of speaking. I'm like, how did you learn to speak the way you speak? And how did you learn? Did you get shy or whatever? Or even when I do my TV stuff, I say it's my only opportunity. So I have to do it right. I do that every time.
Yeah, I love that. So to me, it's always about that first gay impression that you leave on someone. So
yeah.
Tell people, hey, this isn't like your practice run, right? You got one short shot in life and make it count. And again, do your best. But I also tell people, so many people I think get shied away by, they have to wait till, oh, it's going to be perfect, right? I say, look, it's never going to be the perfect time. So I use a phrase called better is perfect, right? If you can just be better, that 1% on every single time, that's my perfect, okay? Always that 1%. So you're a mentor to many, many people, thousands and literally hundreds of thousands of people, right? So who, if any, were your role models or your mentors growing up, and do you have any today?
You know what? I have a lot of mentors today, people that I look at and I admire. I mean, and not because I'm talking to you, you were one of them. You know, Dan, Eric the Trainer, Michael Hearn, you know, from Cali Muscle, people, I mean, from so many different people, because they bring so many different things. You know, these are people that are successful. I don't go for the typical where everybody say, oh my God, do you think about, you know, so-and-so, he's up this. The thing about it is, and I'm gonna be very honest with you, some people had different opportunities than others. Some people were set up for success. Some people had to earn it, right? I look more at those people who had to earn it, who started those that bottom, and they drove their ways up. They had a thing coming out about something, and I'll say this because it was really silly to me. Like, would you rather have $500,000 or have dinner with Jay-Z? And people were like, I want to have dinner with Jay-Z. He's going to give you the blueprint to success. And I was like, that was the dumbest thing I ever heard you say. With $500,000, you can turn it to $500 million if you know what to do by just Googling it now. So, yeah.
That's awesome. So what would you say, I don't know, what's your greatest accomplishment today, would you say?
My greatest accomplishment today?
In your career, in your life?
You know, I haven't thought about that. I mean, honestly, I have, you know, people ask me, what's your best meal? I said, I haven't created it yet. Right. So my greatest accomplishment is that, you know, I'm grateful that I get to help so many people. And when I say I'm actually humbled, like to death, that how many people message me, parents, kids, and so forth and so on, different countries, and say, you're my hero, you're my role model, you're this and that. And I say, no, you're mine, because it's equal and same respect, because I wouldn't be here without the people that support me. And I always remember that. I will never become complacent with that. I will never get too big. And people say that's what they love about me. And it's not what I love, it's my nature.
I love that. It's awesome. So if you had to use one word, and one word only, to describe Chef, what word would that be?
One word to describe Chef, yeah. Me? Yeah. Geez, you put me on the spot with that one. it'd probably start with D and shit. No. Grateful.
That's awesome. Grateful. I probably have a couple of that would fit in there for you. So I think a lot fit your persona and what you do, right, Jeff? You could be inspiration. I think you could be a keyword for you, probably relentless. You have that drive and stuff. So from that standpoint, it's absolutely. So let's talk about a few other things for a second. So I know you have your book. I want the listeners and stuff. So tell us a little bit about your book. Also where they can find that book. But tell us a little bit about the sort of inspiration that drove you to put what's in that book.
So I'll be honest with you, the book is called Call Me Chef, Damn It, right? And you see me, I do this thing. It's, sure, yeah. Actually, I'm a chef, damn it. It's actually an underline, so the book actually has a meaning to it. HarperCollins with Harper Horizon, which is one of the biggest publishers in the world, who came to me with the book. And it was actually, I'm doing a cookbook as well, but they came and said, let's do a memoir first because we want to hear your story. You never talk about it. Because I never talk about myself. It's so many different things. And the book started off to be a very straight, narrow book. And I took it to a place that I didn't know that I would go ever. I didn't know that I would share. And the book talks from everything from my time growing up to military to suicides with guys who committed suicide right hours after talking to me or calling me. From 9/11 getting blown up to racism, to sexual trafficking, to toxic leadership, to the White House, to the military, to just so many different things that it just went and took its own direction. And I said in the book, you know, it's going to not offend a lot of people. It's going to make people look, but it's going to help millions of more just because everybody can relate to it. And I got the best compliments from, you know, the editors who looked at it and said, you've lived many lives, right? Like this book, and I never knew it myself, but going through it, I read it and I was like, who is this person? And it was like from level pages from chapters 1 to 12 and how you would have some small empty spots, you know, where it goes dormant for a little while and it picks back up. Everyone is everything that the editor actually had to say, wow, you need to put more content to this because this is a lot for the viewers to get. So it's out now, pre-order on Amazon, Call Me Chef Damon, and it actually getting released March the 1st. So the PR actually starts next week for it.
That's awesome. So congratulations on that. So I know we talked last weekend when you were in town and grateful for you coming in, but what I know, if you can speak to it, what else do you got going on? I think without dropping sort of what I can't maybe drop it or whatever, I know you got a couple of different TV shows and spots. So what's going on there? Because I love seeing you expand and take your message sort of to different channels.
I do have a couple. I'm actually starting one now, and it's coming up. I'm working on it. And I actually, I'm supposed to say this, but I actually signed with Gordon Ramsay.
Awesome.
Yeah, who's an amazing guy. Small part of it. He's let me use my creative juices. You know, everybody kind of made memes about me and him, about Chef Rush and Gordon Ramsay. I bet he won't do this. But in real life, he's an extraordinary, wonderful businessman and chef. You know, so that's what I love. And he's like, do what you need to do and let's kill this together. right? So I love that together and let me put my juices to work. I'm also doing another show that I can't talk about, yeah, but you'll know it because it's going to be, and it'll be a wonderful show. I like to have fun as well as being serious, but my thing is, I'd rather make you laugh than cry because everybody will laugh together, you know? So I'm grateful about that.
Congrats. You're a busy guy. So let's just wrap this up. Let's tell listeners where they can find you on social, your social media handles, your website. Where can the listeners find you?
So they can find me on IG. That's Real Chef Rush. One word, Real Chef Rush. I think Twitter is the same thing, Real Chef Rush. Website, Chef Rush, where I do all my bookings and just people request me about anything from fitness to food to whatever, to service. And then, of course, my LinkedIn's and everything. So I run all of my different things. My fan page is Chef Rush as well on Facebook. So I take care of all my stuff myself as much as I can. Sometimes I just get overwhelming with it. But I do vet and see if it's something that is needed because I do get a lot of people with suicide ideation, PTSD, or just kind of needing some of that inspiration. And sometimes it just, if you just respond back, it just changes their whole life and mindset.
No, well, I really appreciate you taking the time today, Chef. Definitely look forward to connecting again. We need to get a workout in, get some grub.
We're
on the road a lot, but we'll look forward to hopefully having you back in Dallas here soon, get some different things going on. So grateful. Thank you very much for your time today. And enjoy your weekend. Have a great weekend. And I know you're busy. You're leaving tonight again, so you're not even home. Might get 1 hour sleep on that plane. But thanks a lot, Chef. And we will look forward to talking to you soon.
Thank you, brother.